For too many of us, it's become safer to retreat into our own bubbles, whether in our neighborhoods or on college campuses or places of worship, or especially our social media feeds. Surrounded by people who look like us and share the same political outlook and never challenge our assumptions. And increasingly, we become so secure in our bubbles that we start accepting only information, whether it's true or not, that fits our opinions, instead of basing our opinions on the evidence that is out there. In the course of a healthy debate, we prioritize different goals and the different means of reaching them. But without some common baseline of facts, without a willingness to admit new information and concede that your opponent might be making a fair point, if you're tired of arguing with strangers on the internet, try talking with one of them in real life.
It'd be too easy to talk about nothing, to talk about nothing. Be too easy to talk like I'm something. I'm balling, I'm stunting. Be too easy, chasing the fame. Playing the game, it'll be too easy. But tell them we don't feel that. No, no, tell them we don't feel that.
Well, hey, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Leading Questions with Calvin Moore. I am your host, Calvin Moore, and as always, or as sometimes, I am here with Kent Strath, my co-host. What's up, Kent?
As almost always.
Yeah, see, I was saying, I would always say, as always, and you'd always be like, not really always.
I think so. I missed like three shows in the last year.
Well, so now you're making it a thing. You made it a thing, and now you're making a thing about it being a thing?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh. All right. So...
I'm usually here.
Anything interesting happened to you this week? Nothing.
I got a parking ticket 15 minutes ago.
Well, that's always fun and exciting.
I'm gonna fight it though, and I'm probably not gonna win, but I have it in principle.
Okay. See, anytime I hear someone say that they're gonna fight a traffic ticket, one, it never happens.
Parking.
It never happens. And then two, I instantly in my head imagine the scene from A Time to Kill where he's like, yes, I'm glad they're dead and I hope they burn in hell. I imagine a whole court scene. Or you want the truth, you can't handle the truth.
I'm not sure how you think parking enforcement goes in the city of Royal Oak.
Sir, this is a parking ticket. I think this is a little overboard.
Yes, they deserve to die. Yeah. By the way, we've had a guy, my good friend, coworker, guest, multiple time guest on the show, Steve Phelps. He and his wife had their first date at A Time to Kill.
Oh no!
Yeah, yeah.
All I remember is I went and saw that movie
Blind Date.
I went and saw that movie at the Bel Air 10 in Detroit on 8 Mile Road, and I worked at AMC Theaters at the time, so I got in free. And so all my friends at school would be like, "Hey, let's go see free movie." It's like, cool. Well, I went to this movie, and this was pretty much a predominantly black theater. And we went to go see Time to Kill. And my friends were the only white guys in the entire place. And then we left the theater, and I'm like, all right, just walk very fast. Do not look anybody in the eye. Let's just go. And why do we have to walk out to a stark white Geo Storm? I'm like, white guys getting in a white car with one black guy. Everybody was looking at them like they had raped the little girl in the movie. Like they were those guys. So nobody thought that they were the Matthew McConaughey character.
Nope.
Everybody thought that they were
definitely not Sandra Bullock.
Definitely, yeah, not Sandra Bullock either. But that's neither here nor there.
They were Kiefer Sutherland. I know a lot about this movie.
I did not think we were going to be talking about that movie today. Anyhow, today's conversation is about the topic of fat shaming and also the body positive movement. So we'll be talking about kind of both of those.
The only episode, by the way, I realized as I was walking in the door today that I was classy enough to bring Chicken Shack to. Finished 2 minutes ago.
So. Awesome. Nothing wrong. Love your body, man.
No, it's great. And that's breakfast, though, because it's like 5:15, and I didn't eat today. So
that's the only meal?
Plus, I went to the gym.
Well, it is Ramadan, so
I am a devout Muslim. I went to the gym this morning, and I ran 5.5 miles, and then I had an appointment, and then I went straight to work, and I had a lot of work to do. And so I thought at 4:30, I'm going to have breakfast. I deserve it. So okay. I had chicken pieces.
All right, whatever floats your boat. All right, so we're going to be talking about this topic of fat shaming in the body positive movement, and we've got three guests on the show today, and one of them is not here yet. Sometimes that happens. We start the show at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and so it's basically when everybody's getting out of work and there's super, super amounts of traffic. So first up, I don't have a bio for her because it's been a while since she's been on the show, and it was before we were doing bios. So first up, welcome back to the show, Miss Ellie Flagstaff. Ellie,
Hey,
since I don't have your bio, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well.
And why you decided you wanted to sit on this particular panel.
Okay, well, I am a, I'm a musician. I am a music teacher by trade, and I'm also a performer. I do acting sometimes in local community theaters. I'm a cosplayer. And I decided to sit in on this panel because I am overweight, and I have had a lot. I've pretty much for most of my life now, I have been overweight, and I've dealt with a lot of issues, self-esteem issues, and fat-shaming issues. Not as many as some because I am very tall. I'm 5'11", so I've always been able to hide my weight pretty well, but, like, I know what it is, and it's still, like, I'm clearly not a small person. So there's not been as much fat shaming that's come my way, but I've still been on the receiving end of it.
Okay.
So I just wanted to share my experiences and talk about that.
Okay.
5'11".
Yeah.
I didn't know. I mean, I've met you a number of times, and usually I can look at somebody and say, wow, it's real tall. But I don't know.
Because you're pretty much the same height.
That's why.
Yeah.
That's totally why.
Well, and now I'm wearing like wedges, so I'm really more like 6 feet probably.
Okay, taller than me.
So,
yep.
Well, 5'11", 6 feet. Next up, not in the room yet, but on her way, Miss Elena Knox. She was actually on our Black Women Speak episode, which is great, hosted by... Faya Angelou, and she'll be back in to do part two of that here in a few weeks. But Miss Elena Knox is a Detroit native who stands outside of the box in activism and social media. Her social platform raises awareness to be unapologetically black, body positive, and avid practitioner of self-care. Elena is an active participant in Black Lives Matter and a Penny for Your Thoughts as a healer. Her dreams are to be a professional spoken word artist and a motivational speaker. So obviously from her bio, you can see that she's got some stuff to say about this. I actually invited her... I invited her because she says a lot of really interesting stuff around the topic of loving your body and this body positive stuff that I don't really have a lot of what's the word proximity to, or I want to say practice with, but that's not experience with, right? Mm-hmm. So myself. So I invited her on, and she said absolutely, but again, she's running a little bit behind. And then last but not least, on the Skype line, we have Mr. Dominic Nani. Dominic Nani is a first-year graduate teaching assistant in the English department at Wayne State University. He also teaches at my alma mater, Rochester College in Rochester Hills, Michigan. His research is focused on the role of public intellectuals in a democratic society, as well as the role of education in educating students to be citizens in a democracy. Dominic was on several weeks ago, and... we were on break, and we're out in the middle of we're out in the lobby area, and he's I think Dominic, you were like filling up you were drinking creatine or something, or you're getting it all set, and I was like, okay, cool, yeah, man, you go to the gym, I go to the gym, what do you do? And then we became friends on Facebook that night, and then I saw this weight loss journey that you'd been on in the last year, and I was like, oh my god, he looks like a totally different person. Then I reached out and asked if you wanted to be on as well. But don't let me speak for you. Why did you say yes to being on this panel?
So I like the previous panelists. I've been overweight for most of my life. At my heaviest, I was right around 350 pounds, give or take, and now I'm right about 200. So I've lost about 150 pounds over the course of the past 4 years or so. But I wanted to sit on it not just because of what I've been through, but because I think we are slowly eating ourselves to death. And I think the epidemic of obesity is such a social problem that is not talked about enough, that I think conversations like this are integral to how we solve the obesity epidemic.
Okay. Fair enough.
That's why I'm here.
All right. So let's then just dive into...
Before we start questions, Dominic, I would be really interested to talk to you about what the best way to lose roughly 20, 25 pounds is without changing my lifestyle or eating vegetables. So if you have any ideas about that, I would love to hear them.
Honestly, the quickest way, it's unsustainable in the long term, but the quickest way to drop weight fast is to cut out sugar and carbs from your diet, which is extremely hard because everything has sugar and avoiding carbs is difficult. But I mean, if you think about like the stuff that you eat as being either burned or stored, right? Carbohydrates and sugar are if they're not used for energy, they're stored in your body. So think about like when you have that like carb coma after eating, you know, Taco Bell or like a bunch of like crack fries from Hopcat or something like that, right? That's all being stored in your body.
If you can
eliminate, you know, that, then you can drop weight. Quite fast. And honestly, sure. It's mostly diet. It's 75% diet, 25% working out.
One of the things I didn't think about when I scheduled this particular topic is just how hungry I'm probably going to be at the end of it.
I have fries. There's a full thing of fries.
No, I'm good. But let's in all seriousness, before we get into some of the deeper issues or deeper questions surrounding this particular topic, let's define what we're talking about. Because again, I don't have a lot of experience with this. I guess my body is what's considered a mesomorph, so it's very hard for me to gain weight. I work out all the time, so it's like,
are you red, blue, black, green, or white?
Do you like?
I don't. Maybe I'm using the word wrong. Maybe I'm using the wrong word entirely. But there's certain body types where you're just slender your whole life. That's what I've been. I've never struggled with my weight. So defining. I have always defined, you know, fat and fat shaming through a lens of not understanding what it is like to struggle with being overweight. So I want to hear from our panelists here. When you hear the terms fat shaming and fat shaming, what thoughts come immediately to mind? So that's three terms, fat shaming and then fat shaming specifically.
Let's have Ellie answer with a long-winded, winding answer, and then if Elena's still not here, I'll filibuster for a second.
You have such faith in me, Kent. Because I'll do it. You know it. All right, well, I guess breaking it down as far as just the word fat, I think of overweight. We've been conditioned to think of it as being unattractive as well. Not just overweight, but fat, like morbid, grotesque, that kind of thing. But I have come to think of fat as just, it's if someone calls me fat, I don't take it as an insult, even if they mean it to be, because I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm fat. And do you have nothing more creative to say about me? You're just making an observation about me as a person. You don't know anything about me. You have nothing worse to say about me. Okay, fine. Like, if the worst thing about me is that I'm fat, hint, that's probably not the worst thing about me. But if the worst thing about me is that I'm fat, then whatever, I don't care. But when I hear fat, I think of that's just, it's a state of being overweight. When I hear the word shaming by itself, I think of almost like, casting someone out, or pointing someone out, calling someone out for something that either they have no control over or that you shouldn't be calling someone out for. It's not, being fat should not be offensive to anyone else, because for the same reason that being, I can't think of something to say that's probably not going to come off as offensive, but it's a state of being for me. And so therefore, like, it should not be something that is offensive to you, Calvin. Like, you should not be offended. Wow, she's so fat. I'm really offended.
What?
Mute your microphone. He's over here, like, shaking his root beer and crunching
ice.
Away.
Just crunching
ice. I thought it was. Sorry, I'm chewing ice. Picked up the habit in the last couple months.
Uh-huh.
It's better than smoking. Get off my back. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Not great for audio.
No.
But
I think of, because I'm a cosplayer, I think of shaming in terms of that almost. Like when if someone has, example, someone posts a picture of someone else's cosplay that they've worked really hard on, and, you know, maybe it's not perfect, and maybe there's some things that they sort of threw together, but they're really proud of it, and they really worked hard on it, and someone posts a picture of them online and makes fun of them. That would be cosplay shaming. Now, fat shaming kind of intersects with a lot of other things. You can fat shame someone for the way they cosplay, which is one reason why I have only historically cosplayed overweight characters or characters that anybody can really beat, like my version of Snow White. Like, nobody's going to sit there and be like, oh, she should never be Snow White, blah, 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 because I'm not trying to be that, like, wispy, willowy child that mm-hmm. she is.
And for the record, for those of you who are listening, I wish we were a podcast right now, because for the last few days, Ellie has been part of a photo shoot where they were all dressed as Disney characters. And right now she is coming from – she wore the same costume to school today because it was Crazy Hair Day.
Yeah.
And she's dressed as Ursula from – and there will be a picture of this later on. She's dressed as Ursula from The Little Mermaid right now. And yeah. the crazy thing is – you look just like her. And if someone skinny came in dressed as Ursula, I'd be like, I don't buy it. But because of your size, I'm like, oh, I buy that. So right. But I've never thought of right. I never thought of it. Elena just walked in the door.
Hi.
We're on the first question. We're explaining our friend here, Ellie, is a cosplayer and also has been doing a Disney-themed photo shoot. So that's why she's dressed as Ursula here.
Yeah, and today was Crazy Hair Day at the school where I work. And so I was like, yeah, I'm going to wear my wig and do my makeup and wear a cute dress and whatever. So,
But we're on the first question. So continue there.
So fat shaming, I think calling someone out for specifically the way they look and because it somehow offends you or because you want to get a rise out of them. But just commenting on how big they are and how they should do X, Y, or Z in order to look better.
Okay.
And it's basically implying that, okay, to please me, because it's about me now, you need to lose 30 pounds.
Okay.
So that's what I think of immediately.
Okay. Dominic or Elena, your thoughts on this first question. What's fat? What's shaming? What's fat shaming?
I agree with what everyone has said so far, but when
it's
I
just
think
been
of
one
fat
person
shaming,
so far.
I know I speak with a multitude.
Glad you agree.
I meant to say what has been said so far. Sorry, but if you think about fat shaming to me is when you shame someone for how they look. But I think we have to be careful to separate how someone looks and the lifestyle that they live, because I think addressing the causes of obesity are just as important, right? So if you tell someone that they're overweight, you can't frame it as, oh, I'm telling you that you're unattractive or that you look bad, or if you did X, Y, and Z, you would look better. But I think we have to instead talk about the circumstances or the lifestyle choices or the nutrition, you know, the things that people eat, the causes that are leading them to become obese, because I think that's just as important. But in terms of fat shaming, you know, I agree with what has been said that it's simply, you know, you are not attractive because you are a certain weight, or you look bad because it is unpleasant for me to look at or someone else to look at. But I think we have to separate like lifestyle from maybe physical characteristics, I think, of someone.
Okay. Dominic, can I add also based on something that you said when talking about, because I think you almost were referring to like talking about their lifestyle and almost like giving them advice. And it just reminded me of that fat shaming as a concept is never asked for. It's a behavior. It's a comment that's never asked for. If I ask Calvin, hey, could you give me some advice for blah, blah, blah? And he says, oh, well, at your current size, maybe this, this, and this might be good for you. Then that I would not take that as shaming, right? Because it's solicited.
Right.
So fat shaming, much like the mansplaining thing we talked about in a previous episode, would be uncalled for. Well, were you going to say, actually? Yeah. Thank you for bringing that full circle.
What about you, Elena?
I agree with what you said. What's your name again?
Ellie.
Hi. Okay. I agree with what Ellie said, but I would add that fat shaming is the belief that the more space you take up, the less valuable you are. Even to go on to talk about health, because I recently have been diving into this belief that, like, even as an unhealthy person, I'm valuable and my existence matters, right? So even if I am unhealthy, right, which it's being overweight does have health issues, that is a fact, right? But it's not exclusive with me being unhealthy. And so I think that fat shaming comes with this idea that the smaller you are, the better you are. You need to take up less space, and your mm-hmm. look right now is bothering me, so I need you to change it. That's mm-hmm. really what it is.
Okay. And let me just say that I want to give Calvin credit for you were right. Elena's hair is spectacular.
Yeah,
I mean, it is. And this is a podcast, I realize, and this is not, you know, it doesn't work on radio, but well done, ma'am. Anyway.
We also have Ursula here, too, who also has fantastic
yeah.
hair.
Yeah, but mine doesn't take up.
I feel like my hair is not doing enough today.
It's not real.
Beautiful.
Thank
yes.
you.
But so let's move forward here, then.
So can everybody give one or two everyday experiences with fat shaming that you've personally gone through?
Oh, for sure. I get to pick out of the bunch. Definitely, I hear a lot from my family or my brothers. I have brothers, and like they talk about women all day long. Every time I'm around them, I just hear them like talk about what women they have and all this. And they separate the idea of fat, or they almost like make them like their opposites, fat and beautiful. Mm-hmm. So it's like, she fat, but she's pretty. Or she's like, and I get that all the time. Like, you're big, but you're beautiful. Or I call myself fat online, and people are like, no, you're not fat. You're pretty.
She has such a pretty face.
Yeah, and it's like, right. No. I'm fat, and I'm beautiful, mm-hmm. and that's a thing. And it's mutually, you know, exclusive. Mm-hmm. Another one is, but you're not fat. You're like, you're not sloppy fat, right? And that's, like, really commenting on the idea that on the spectrum of what fat is and, like, super morbidly obese and like shape privilege and like having hips and having breasts, it's like you're not fat as in your proportions look okay to me, so I'm not gonna like, you know, I'm not gonna down you too much, which right. is still downing someone, and it's not okay.
Yeah. It's like telling someone like when I hear that kind of thing, what you're saying, I almost think of someone thinking they're giving a compliment but they're not, like, oh yeah. Yo, Calvin, you're so well spoken. You're a credit to your race. Like, they feel they're being kind.
Yeah.
Like they are literally in their mind paying me a compliment, but they don't realize that their compliment is steeped in a racist ideology of what black people are right. truly.
I think the particular racist word there is, and I'm glad to be white. The particular racist word you're looking for is articulate. You're so articulate.
Yeah, articulate. Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, is it kind of along those lines, Elena? When
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I would say very similarly, if I go on dating sites,
you've posted some adventurous stuff. In terms of dating.
Yeah.
You're brave.
And if you listen to Reasons Why I'm Single, they've been sharing some of my favorite stories.
it's another good podcast here on the Podcast Detroit Network.
But a lot of times men on there will ask for, on any dating sites, will ask for full body pics because they want to make sure that you're not a fatty fat. And that your face, because girls, we know how to work a camera. We know how to work the lens.
Angles.
And we know how to work them angles. And so I can make it look like, you can make it look, if you want to, like you're a different size than you are based on the angles when you take a selfie. So they want to make sure that they're not accidentally talking to somebody who they think is a dog because they're too fat. Like, they could have a great conversation with me and then meet me in person and then say, oh, you know what, you're too fat. So there's that. But
doesn't that have a good side in that when somebody asks that, it just saves a lot of time?
No, it does save a lot of time because I know they're a total dick.
Right. Right.
But I do try to post like a picture of me like from at least like halfway, like a medium shot or something in a dating profile, so they don't really have an excuse at that point. The main thing that comes to mind when I think of fat shaming for me is when after I just graduated from college, I was about 20 pounds lighter than I am right now. And I was applying for teaching jobs all over the place. I had literally dozens of applications everywhere. I'd had several interviews. And my mom told me about a week before I just got my first teaching job, a week before this happened, my mom stood in my room and told me, you know, it's going to be harder for you to get a job because you're overweight. Mm. And I looked at her and I was like, you don't think I know that? And then I shut the door in her face. And then I got a job the next week or 2 weeks later. But
sometimes. And haven't talked to mom since no, I showed her.
Recently.
Oh, okay. But you would have gotten the job in 2 days had you not been overweight. I mean, I would never think to say something.
So,
I
wouldn't. No, exactly. And
there are things
recently,
I have said, but yeah. That's not one of those things I would think.
And I recently talked to my mom about this, and she, of course, hotly denied ever saying it. And we had a big, long thing about it. And I was like, you know, of course I forgave you because that's what you do. And you thought you were being helpful, even though you weren't. But when you say something like that, I mean, for me, it didn't discourage me. It made me just want to prove her wrong. So people think sometimes that when they say these things, they're trying to help you and that maybe they'll change your mind about something when really all they're doing is making us give them the finger. As I give Calvin the finger and smile.
I think people are going to think, is Ursula flicking everybody off?
Oh, yes. And, but all it really does is just make me want to do it without that. And if you really are trying to help, there's so many other ways that you could do that if I'm asking for help rather than just coming down with those kind of comments. Because that all that does is make me want to say, you know what? Well, kind of screw you. I'm going to do this without you and without your comments. And okay. I know I'm fat. I'm still capable.
Okay.
And I don't want for at all. I don't want for a second to be thought of as being detached from this conversation or be thinking about other things. But I want you to know that during that story, I was reciting the lyrics to "Poor Unfortunate Soul." It's a powerful costume.
Okay, so you did say that I wasn't going to take you seriously. I am taking you seriously.
Kent is not.
I am absolutely taking you seriously.
Kent is having a hard time.
Whatever.
Yeah. I respect the cosplay.
Kent, that is cosplay.
That's what Dominic has to say.
Yeah, so Dominic, your thoughts.
So so there are two of them, but the biggest one perhaps, when I was at my heaviest, the only place I could buy clothes was the Big and Tall at JCPenney. And they are the only store, there are more now, but you know, 4 years ago, they were the only store that I could buy clothes at in my neighborhood. And it was more along the lines of, you know, having to go into the store, not knowing where the quote unquote fat people section is at, and then having to ask where it's at. And then walk there. And then as I am looking at clothes, hear people walking around making comments about, oh, my God, who's that big? Or why would anyone need clothes this big? Or, you know, is this section for fat people? Blah, 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 blah. That was probably the worst. And the worst because I would see people I know at the store making those comments. Not directed at me, right? But just in general, like, why would anyone need clothes this big? Oh my God, I didn't know they made clothes this big. You know, it was those kind of remarks, maybe not directed directly at me, but for
it
people like
you.
Me
yeah.
who were shopping there in that section or who could possibly need, you know, clothes that are that big.
It was middle school girls, right? Because middle school girls are the worst.
Well, it was weird because it was what was most disappointing about it was a lot of times it was parents. Ooh. Who were making comments to their kids about it or reinforcing what the kids were saying. Mm-hmm. You know, if like a 10-year-old kid would make a comment about these super fat people shopping for clothes rather than saying, you know, as a parent being like, you know, they're don't be mean or, you know, they're getting a pair of clothes or, you know, rather than normalizing as in I'm shopping for clothes no different than you. I just need a different size than you do. They would reinforce what the kids said. Mm. Like, yeah, they're huge or, oh, my God, they're enormous. Look at those people in there. So that was probably the most disheartening part of it. I'm like, you know, do you know you're raising your kid to be, you know, extremely mean and rude? You know, rather than telling them that's wrong to say. And then the second thing is just I come from a family of a lot of eaters. Italians are notorious for eating large amounts of food. The bad part about being Italian is that Italy's the most healthy country in the world. Like the diet is horrible, but the people are healthy. I don't know how that works. And so when I go visit my family
wine.
In Italy, it's always
a lot of wine.
Wine and olive oil. Okay. But I mean, when I go visit my family, you know, they eat a lot of food. And I went for the first time a few years ago, and it would be like, are you sure you want to have seconds? I mean, you really don't need that. You should probably, it's the kind of very veiled, I'm going to show concern for how big you are by asking you if you really need seconds or thirds and telling you don't need it. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to tell you direct to your face that I'm calling you fat. Do you know, I'm sure other people on the panel have experienced this before.
Interesting.
That's kind of the same thing too. It's like, yeah, if I want seconds, I'm going to eat seconds. Don't tell me what I can eat. But in response to you asking for more food, you always get the, are you sure about that? See, I think you've had enough.
I'm sitting here trying to
probably.
Think. I'm trying to think of the things that are invisible to me. Again, Elena was here several weeks ago for the first time. This is your second time on the show, right? But first time with me as the host, where I just sat and listened to black women speaking about their issues here in America. And a lot of what I've listened to that episode now like four or five times because a lot of stuff was just invisible to me. I'm like, holy crap. Like, and I was raised by a black woman. You know, my sister's a black woman. My daughter is, you know, a black woman as well. And so thinking about all these different things, it was invisible to me. So this kind of conversation, I'm sitting here trying to think of things I might have said when I was younger. Because there are definitely views that I have that are probably going to come out in the second half. Because my wife and I had a big conversation about this morning. But something lighthearted that now I'm looking back on and going, oh, that's kind of, it seems pretty kind of crappy. Was when I was a kid, they would do a race. It was generally at camp time, and they would buy really, really big pants, men's pants, where one kid could fit into one side. And we're not like just talking really long. We're talking about fat, wide pants. And so it's kind of like this joke, like, hey, you're running around in fat man's pants. Two kids can fit inside of inside of. Obviously, context of the conversation: two kids can fit inside a fat man's pair of pants in a relay race. All right, I'm thinking about that kind of thing. I'm going, huh?
Yeah, like you don't even view this as an article of clothing. It is now something so you could play a game with.
It's a prop.
Yeah, it's a prop. Yeah.
Yeah, and so this is not something anybody would ever wear.
Not even to mention the idea that there are not many options for people who are bigger, but now we're going to buy them so we can play games.
I didn't even think about that. I'm only thinking about it because we're having this conversation here. But okay, but I've heard some stuff here. A person said, "Do you really need a second helping?" Which is kind of a veiled way of saying, "Hey, you're fat," without saying you're fat. Your mom saying, "Hey, you're not going to get a job. You know, it's going to be harder for you to get a job at your weight." Yeah, I know, Mom. Is there a dynamic to shaming someone that's positive? And the reason I'm asking this question is coming out of an understanding of how things like coaching work. They did sports science one time where they did the player who was cheered on by the coach, having problems with free throws, made some free throws, but the person who was being berated by their coach, pretty much shamed by their coach, did better than the person who was cheered on by their coach. And so the question here is tough love, or is there a positive side to shaming to get someone to change if something is unhealthy?
No. I think that the closest...
And why? Yeah, okay, so why the no then?
The closest you can really come to that is where it's coming from. For, like, a couple of things sprung to mind for me. First of all, in my mom's case, she thought she was helping me. She thought that somehow she was going to... And she has said things since then that she thinks she's being helpful. It's not coming from a place of wanting to shame me. It's coming from a place of, I want to help you, and I want to help you be healthy. Because my father's overweight. He's had diabetes for several years. It went undiagnosed for a while because he just refused the diagnosis. He's had strokes. He's now, like, at home with severe, like, rehab from his last stroke last year. So there, my parents are like, oh my God, we're terrified because you're overweight. Mm-hmm. And I have had to lay into them and say, I know that you have the best intentions for me, but right now I do not have any major health issues other than just my weight. My blood pressure is fine. Everything is in working condition. I'm working with my doctor to find to work on my weight. That's all you need to know right now. Because I know that as far as they are concerned, it comes from a place of help. But the only time where something like that, where you're asking for, like, if you're working with a trainer, the only time where I would be okay with them, like, berating me is if I've asked for it, if I'm going into this knowing that they're gonna call me a pussy and, like, want me to...
Right, you can, like, do one more rep.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Like, what are you, some limp dick? Like, come on, do it. Because that, for me, would be more of an insult. Like,
You've had some bad trainers, I'll tell you, because I had trainers and nobody ever said that to me.
I have not had a trainer, thank you. I'm just using it as a hypothetical.
Right, I went into the sports analogy. So
yeah, if I'm asking for, if I'm going into it, asking for it, and knowing that this is going to happen for me, then, you know, I can accept that. But as an overall thing, no.
Mm-mm. Okay.
Elena? I think even with a sports analogy, and this is me speaking from my perspective. Everyone is different, so people might take it differently, you know. But even if I do perform better because you are shaming me, is it really positive? Am I performing better now because I am afraid of being, like, ridiculed and now I'm traumatized? You've traumatized me. So is that positive in a sense of I am performing better and we're probably winning now because of me and I'm doing, like, that? Yes, you know. But for my mental health, which, if we're caring about health here, that's a thing, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, my mental health is actually taking, like, a downward spiral because you have been, like, so critical. And I don't think tough love is a thing. I don't think that's a thing. And I'm like, that's, like, one of my unpopular opinions. I don't know if you've seen me, like, rant about it on Facebook. But I think
it's hard to keep up with all the different rants.
It's, like, all over the place. And I'm just, like, randomly just on the toilet. Like, you know what? Tough love is not a thing.
But, well, like, let me be.
I'm glad to know that that's where you are when all this
literally
really hot.
Just, like, doing nothing. Like, you know what? I think I
see, now, now when you say something that's deep, I'm going to be like, she taking a dump.
Most of the time, that's probably where I am. I'm not going to lie.
That's so funny.
Let me be the jackass in the room. And let me say, to use another metaphor, don't give me the look saying that I am comparing.
Oh, I'll give you the look.
You can.
Yeah, Dominic.
You can. I'm not comparing one to the other, but if you, and I don't know that you could, I get that it's probably not possible, but if I could brutally shame somebody out of a drug addiction, I would do it. And that would, I think, be a net positive, right?
Because they're still here?
Because they're here. And
here for what?
I don't know. What comes after drug addiction? I don't know.
I don't know. Now, see, if you've brutally shamed someone out of a drug addiction, then where do you think they're at after that, being brutally shamed?
Alive, which is better than the alternative.
Alive is better than dead for you?
Alive is better than...
Alive is definitely better than dead.
We're going to have to agree that alive is better than dead. I mean, yes.
So your question, Elena, is more around quality of life. What kind of life does that person have, even though they're still alive?
What kind of life does that person live? And I think that's also very, like, relative, the idea that just because I'm alive, I'm living, right? So, like, you kept me here, and now what? You know, I was talking about suicide today, actually. That was my rant for the day. And the idea that you want me here because, like, most people's response is, like, no, don't, because we need you. And it's like, well, that's not a good reason to have someone stay here, right? So, like, can I shame you into just being here? For what? Just to be here because, I mean, for religious purposes, people feel like being here is better. I get that. But, like, be here and hate myself and not want to do anything and, like,
that's... Hopefully not that. Hopefully you – I'm saying that there is a possibility of having a better – of having a good, fulfilled life that is – there's a 0% possibility of that if you're dead. So – if you have to be truly spectacularly mean to somebody to make sure that they're alive next week when they otherwise might not be, I'm okay with it.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think the question is fair. I think your question is fair. But I think it also assumes the only possible outcome is that person's now damaged and their life is, you know, beyond repair if they're here anyway. I think that's a possibility for sure. I don't want to say, oh, that's never going to happen because it could, because there are people who have a terrible quality of life who were shamed into staying. But I still believe at bottom, both religiously and secularly, that, you know, being alive is better than dead. But that's my perspective on that. But
we've never been dead.
We have not. We have not. You can only do that once. And nobody's only one person has ever come back and still said it sucked.
And that was and that was Meredith Grey in season 3. Anybody?
Yeah, we're talking about Grey's Anatomy anyway. Dominic, your thoughts.
What was that?
Your thoughts. Dynamic to shaming someone is
Is there any dynamic to that that is ever positive?
So
we've got two no's.
So when I started training at the gym, I had a trainer who was extremely nice about things, and that was great. But I went on to have another trainer who was not mean, but used my body image as a means of motivating me to do better at the gym, I suppose. And it wasn't mean about it. It was just like, well, if you want to get better, right? If you want to be stronger than you are right now, you know, we have to work harder, or something along those lines. And so I think it's a balance. Like, you can use someone's, like, you can use your weight right now as a motivating factor to maybe losing weight, or, you know, to eating healthier, or to, you know, changing who you are for the better. But there comes a certain point where you draw on being mean about it. And I think that's the point where it becomes harmful. So I think there are ways you can do it, as long as it is constructive, as in, you know, oh my God, like, you want to deadlift 400 pounds or something. I don't know. Well, we got to get to work then, right? Because you can't do it right now. That's fine. But if you're saying, like, you know, you're a fat, I don't, can we swear?
Yes.
If you're a fat ass, you know, you're not going to be able to lift that weight. So, you know, you're just whatever. You're not, you know, like, I think there becomes a certain point where it becomes mean. So there are ways you can do it, as provided it's constructive and positive, or constructive and, you know, meant towards motivating you to do better. But if you're just calling someone names, right, hoping that they respond positively to that, that's not only not constructive, I think it's probably harmful to the person's emotions as well. And overall self-esteem, which is kind of unfortunate, because if you're trying to get healthier and lose weight, right, you don't want to hurt someone's self-esteem, and you don't want to hurt their emotions, because it is an extremely emotionally grueling path to, you know, losing weight, eating healthier, you know, if you want to go on that path.
Okay.
So when and where do concepts of body size come into play?
What do you, like, are you talking about, like, if you're at the gym, or what do you mean specifically?
No,
like,
I wrote these questions, I'll just be honest.
Okay.
The question comes from, again, the conversation I was having with my wife earlier today. And, you know, the fact that I have a niece who is 13 years old, and she's starting to have issues about her body. And I'm like, you're like rail thin. Okay. Now you have a little bubble butt, but that's normal. Your body's starting to have curves, but you're still super thin. My daughter, 14 years old, also starting to, you know, have, you know, body issues. And I was watching something the other day where a girl was looking in the mirror and doing all sorts of poses, and she was a young girl, teenage girl. And I remember somebody remarking, I can't remember who I was with, but someone remarking, that's when it starts. That's when, oh, we've all done that. We've all done the primping and preening in front of the, you know, in front of the mirror. And so the question here is, yeah, when do these concepts of body size come into play? At what point? So I'll use my religious background. Adam and Eve, they sin. They're naked the whole time, and then all of a sudden their eyes are open. They can sin. They can see they're naked, and God goes, "Who told you that you're naked?" Like, all of a sudden they're aware of their nakedness. Mm-hmm. And so, at what point do people become aware of their bodies? Like, my body doesn't fit the norm. My body is not what is desirable. When do those things come into play?
Well, they're all, I mean, sorry if someone else wanted to jump in. I mean, it's all, on some level, it's all socially constructed. Like, we have constructed a way of, we collectively have constructed an outlook of what constitutes, if you want to say hot, if you want to say beautiful or attractive. And unfortunately, as the decades have gone on, that, you know, image of what constitutes beautiful or hot or attractive have gotten even smaller. I mean, people will share pictures on Facebook all the time of, say, models in the 1950s versus models now, you know, or swimsuit catalogs or underwear models or whatever, you know, wherever these pictures are at. And the people in these ads have gotten smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. So on some level, it's constructed, right? We have whether or not we buy into it or not, or whether we are overweight or not, right? Even there are overweight people who desire someone, you know, I think that person's extremely attractive and they're a lot skinnier than I am, right? So even if you are overweight, right, we collectively have created this construct of what we think constitutes beautiful or hot or attractive. And unfortunately, as a society, there is no room in that most of the time, I think, for people who are overweight. And so that's where you get things like fat shaming. But I think on another level, it's, you know, we personally become aware, you know, Adam Smith says we are aware of our condition as a moral human being by looking at other people, right? So at some age, we begin to compare ourselves with other people and we go, well, I'm different from them. And I think that's also where it starts as well.
Okay. Ladies?
We are, I think from like, well, one, I think beauty culture is violent, right?
Yeah.
So I think that from day one.
Are you about
I
to mean, define what that meant?
Beauty culture.
Yeah.
Beauty culture as
being like, violent. I don't know what beauty culture is. And I don't, well, I know what that is, but I don't know what it being violent means.
Beauty culture is violent in the way that it pushes an image down our throat and we spend the rest of our lives
obsessing
over it in unhealthy ways.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. So mentally unhealthy, physically unhealthy, like everything, it's just really bad. And you know, beauty culture, like as in the media, like magazines, TV. And I think that's something that is like, we are force fed since like we're day one. And there are like small things that we don't even notice in TV. And now, unfortunately, I notice everything. And like, I'll watch, kids shows with my nieces and nephews, or I'll be like reading books and like you'll see them, like even the Little Mermaid and the idea that Ursula is the only big one in there, and like you are now being force fed this image that like fat people are mean and they're like, and like you have these bullies, and then the desperate fat girl stereotype where every fat, like we have Miss Parker and Professor Ogilvy, and like this is what you see every time you see fat people. You see them played as this person, as like this evil, bad, negative, dark cloud of whatever. And so I think that it starts really early on. And I saw it's different for men and women when we come into like, it's different for men and women. It's different for black women, white women, black men. Like, I think it's different for everyone. But I saw a meme of a onesie for little girls, and it was right next to a onesie for little boys. And like, the little boy's onesie says, I'm amazing, like I'm a superhero or something. And then the little girl's onesie says, I hate my thighs, you know, and it's supposed to be cute, but like you're teaching them this at a very young age, that this is what women are supposed to be. This is what you are supposed to not like your body.
Might I just say that a baby in a onesie, if it can read that,
I was gonna say,
super, super impressed. I'm kidding. Yeah, I get your point. Yeah, just want some levity there.
I also am feeling very sorry I bought that onesie for my niece.
Did you?
I did that years ago.
Did you really?
Yes.
Oh my God. Ken's part of the problem.
I'm going to go.
Ken was part of the problem. No.
She couldn't read then, and she's turned out great.
Yeah.
For now.
It starts really, really, really young. And I think, like, I think we're force fed this, like, image from day one. And I'm majoring in early childhood right now in school. And we're learning the different stages of when kids, we actually were talking about race relations, but at the age of 6 to 9 is when they start to have biased opinions about people, right? And so, like, it starts young, like from 1 to 2, I believe it is. Yeah, from 1 to 2, you can copy your parents, right? So, like, if you see them behave towards a certain person a certain way, or you see something like Ursula on TV and this is the kind of person it is, you can now be...
Hey, Dominic, go ahead and mute your microphone for a second. We're getting some background noise.
Like, you're learning from, like, birth, like, from, like, 1 year to 9 years old. And 9 is, like, when you have completely created bias and, like, you now don't like this type of girl or you don't like this kind of guy because whatever. And so it starts really young. I've heard my 8-year-old cousin, every time I'm around her for every holiday, she's like, I can't eat that. I'm on a diet. Like, what do you mean you're on a diet? You know, you're like, she just looks like a normal little girl. And it's not because she has bad parents. Her parents don't tell her she's fat, you know. But she's probably seen her parent look in the mirror and say, oh, I need to lose so much weight. And shoving herself into waist trainers. And you see it from a really, really young age.
What about you, Ellie?
I would agree so far with everything that's been said about when it comes into play and where... I remember, for me, the first time that my body image was an issue was in middle school. Surprise! I was in middle school, and it wasn't that everyone else made a big deal about it. I mean, every so often, there was a group of mean girls, because there's always a group of mean girls who would comment on my clothes Or if I said that I liked a certain store in the mall, then they would start laughing because they knew that I couldn't buy clothes there because I didn't have my sizes. When I was in middle school, I was shopping in like the Mrs. department. I almost could never wear junior size anything starting in middle school. And so I remember being very aware of it then. For me, was in seventh grade, if not in seventh grade, definitely by eighth grade, being very like hyper aware of the clothes I wore and how I was shopping in the Mrs. section and my parents were basically picking up my clothes for me because, I mean, that was where I fit. That was the clothes that fit me. And for me, I mean, going to the beach, I mean, picking out swimsuits, that kind of thing has always been a body image issue for women. I mean, people are trying to be more positive about it now for the most part. Like, how do you get a bikini body? You put a bikini on your body. That's how you get one. Hmm. But it's still the idea of, for me, of sometimes, even though I have fairly good self-confidence and self-esteem as far as my body goes now, there's still the idea of, well, I could wear a bikini, but I really don't want to because there's still that little nugget that's worried about what someone might say. And it comes into cosplay for me. Like I was saying earlier, like the main characters that I've cosplayed have been Ursula, have been Snow White, which can sort of, if you do different interpretations of that, it can go wherever and nobody says anything about it because, you know, it's your own interpretation. Have been Pam from Archer, which is my favorite so far, and a character from Venture Brothers, 2Ton21, who's overweight. I almost cosplayed another character from Venture Brothers this year at Motor City, but she was a skinny teenage goth girl, and I thought, you know what, I don't really connect to her, and I also had that fear of, like, cosplay and fat shaming coming at me of, like, I was just some sad fat goth girl.
I just never thought about that kind of thing.
So for me, that's where it has come into play in the past and that part recently. And I hadn't really thought about it. And then I was able to articulate that. And I was like, yeah, I don't really want to deal with that. So I'm just going to, you know, be Pam, who's fat and awesome.
See, I do that along the lines. I have not gone to a Comic-Con yet. We're going to take a break here in a minute. But since we're nerding out for a minute, I've thought of going to some of these Comic-Cons and dressing up. But I know when I was a kid, my favorite superhero was Superman. And anytime I dressed up as Superman, I always got the Superman's not black. I'm like, well, Superman's not even human. He's Kryptonian. But you know, that's neither here nor there. But I know he presents white, right? And so, like, that would be my consideration. Like, do I go as John Stewart, the black Green Lantern? Do I go as Steel? Do I go as Frozone? Do I go as Shaft? Do I go as anything that Samuel Jackson has played in comic books, essentially? A Mace Windu. It's all Samuel Jackson at this point. That's who I get to play, right?
I just wanted to point out that you've never been to a Comic-Con, but I have been to San Diego 14 years in a row.
Shut up.
Not San Diego Comic-Con.
San Diego Comic-Con.
There's no way you've been to San Diego Comic-Con.
There's no way. That is totally not true.
That's not true. No. All right. No. So yes, we're gonna take a 10-minute break here, and we'll be back. Well, hey, everybody, thanks so much for waiting there on the line for us. We're going to dive right back into this conversation about fat shaming and the body positive movement.
Before we get back into that, I was just going to say I had a terrible experience during the break.
Okay. I was there. I'm trying to gauge what you're going to say because, you know, I don't recall anything horrible happening.
You know the ice I was crunching earlier?
Mm-hmm.
I've run out of root beer.
Okay.
And now it's just ice. I feel gypped. And when I say
this
that,
seems like a first world problem.
That is exactly the phrase that came to mind. It is totally first world problem. And then I stopped as soon as I said that I felt cheated. I thought, you know what? I got my own ice. It was at a machine, and I chose how much ice to get. But now
you played yourself.
Yep. So that's kind of mood I'm in for the next 40 minutes.
Well, you have no one to blame but yourself, and I will not accept any crap from you because of it.
Okay.
It's your own failure.
Good.
Anyhow, I have a hard time feeling sorry for you. So let's jump back. Stop it. Let's jump back into this conversation. So a lot of good stuff said on the front end of the show.
some stuff said during the break that will probably be repeated, as I was just telling the ladies before we came back on the air. And Dominic is just finding out because I didn't tell him.
Sorry, Dominic.
Well, he was supposed to be here, but something's going on Wayne State campus, so he was gracious enough to at least call in. So let's be honest, though, for a minute here. Not that we haven't been honest in the first half of the conversation, but America is one of the most obese. It is the most obese nation in the world, with some of our cities having an average of 60% of its citizens being overweight or obese. Southeastern Michigan is one of those places where I think Detroit ranked the fattest city in the United States for a minute there. I believe that a Texas city overtook us, but they put cheese on everything. Huh?
Got to be Houston, right? I keep hearing it's Houston.
I Google it. Google the fattest cities. But anyway, compared to other developed nations, our portions are massive. I mean, we had a documentary called Supersize Me that essentially ended the practice of supersize at McDonald's, but they just changed the names of the sizes, honestly. But from fast food, supersize, to sit-down dinners with a second carry-out dinner like Mangiano's in Troy, Michigan. You know, like you order a full-size lasagna, and they're like, you're going to get another lasagna to take home with you. Like, I'm not even fully through this one, but I got another one. I'm going to be eating off of this for the next couple of days, at least myself. But these are huge portions. Given this reality, isn't it more accurate or more honest to say that our country is accepting of fat people in practice? Because we seem to be doing a lot to make sure that people are fat or that they maintain their weight.
It's accepting of their money. I think that part of it has to do with getting them addicted to food and mm-hmm. getting them addicted to your food and getting them to spend more money, because the more that you give them, the more they're going to want to get and the more money they're going to spend to get that food more often.
It's like when McDonald's lowers the price on 20-piece nuggets.
It has nothing to do with let's serve these fat people better. And, well, let's make these people fat because fat is beautiful. It has nothing to do with that. It has everything to do with let's create hungry, like, for as far as they're concerned, as far as these people are concerned, let's create some cows who will just give us their money so we can just force feed them this food. That's where it has nothing to do with being accepting, because fashion is not accepting of fat people. Fashion is not accepting of it. There's more and more designers who are, but overall, like, I have to pick and choose which stores I'm going to if I'm going to buy a dress, if I'm going to buy pants, because I have to buy pants that are, I have to find a place that will sell pants that are long and big enough. They're not overall accepting. There's still, like, separate stores and separate sections just for specific sizes, because fashion overall is not in favor of it. And really the only reason why, like, the food, why people sell that, like, the massive portion sizes is to get people hooked on their food so they'll keep coming back.
I think also too, an important thing to realize is that in America it costs, they want people to spend money on healthy food, on unhealthy food, but it costs more money to eat healthy. Mm-hmm. And so not only is eating unhealthy a matter of convenience, right? I mean, if you kind of look at fast food, look at our coffee, for example, the to-go cup, it's all around this idea that we're moving, we're working. So food is kind of an afterthought. It's something that we have while we're doing something else. But so that we have all these fast food restaurants, right? So it's not only convenient to eat badly or poorly, mm-hmm. but it's cheaper. I mean, if you go to McDonald's and you can get a double cheeseburger for 99 cents or a salad for $4, what are you going to get? If you're a poor person living in inner city Detroit and you can spend 99 cents on a can of vegetables that are processed and pumped with all sorts of things versus organic or fresh produce.
And Dominic, I promise you,
if
I could reverse those numbers, if I could amplify those numbers, if I could go to McDonald's mm-hmm. and get a double cheeseburger for $8 or a salad for 50 cents, I'm getting mm-hmm. the double cheeseburger. It's not.
I'm just saying it creates a situation where people who are financially not affluent or disadvantaged are forced to eat unhealthily mm-hmm. or eat unhealthy foods. And so that's why, you know, there's a higher obesity rate among those people living in poverty, because we've made a business out of not only eating poor food, but also eating healthy food. I mean, think of all the fad diets and fad health food things and organic stuff and all of the stuff that exists now. It all costs money. And some people can't afford it, and so they're forced to eat poor food, processed food, food that's not good for you, or food that is just simply, I mean, shit, right? I mean, if that's what we can call fast food.
And this Kent, is why Kent and I have gone back and forth about an episode that has not happened yet. I want to do the episode. The episode on food justice.
Boring. No, yeah. It's fine. It's,
right. Yeah. why are there party stores on the corner in low income areas? Like my mom and dad, they had a corner store, and you would go down the street, and there was sometimes food, like in the hot box. You get the pizza, you get chicken wings, you get whatever. But it was quick and it was fast. And then there were food like substances at the party store. I think Dave Chappelle has a joke, and I've said this several times on the show, where in Killing Them Softly, way back in the day, he talks about the old Sunny Delight commercial where all the kids run in, and there's like one black kid, and all the white kids are like, all right, I got some cola, I got some purple stuff, I got some Sunny Delight, and all the white kids are like, yeah, Sunny D! And the black kid's like, I want that purple stuff. Because, that was what, and he goes, and the main ingredients was that. It was sugar, water, and of course, purple.
Yep.
Those were the ingredients in the juice, juice.
Yeah, close.
Yeah, the whole running joke. He's like, what is juice? Like, I don't know what that is. And so access for people who are poor, as you're right, Dominic, just access to healthy options are not there if you don't have the money. It is very expensive to eat well. However, my only pushback would be –
And then think about it. What happens if you're a poor person who gets food stamps and you buy healthy food?
You're going to get less. You're going to get less unless you're going to a place like, okay, so there are places that are coming alongside, people who are, on hard times. Like Eastern Market, they accept women, infant, and children. So you can go there with your WIC card and you can get healthy options for your kids. Same thing with the Urban Earthworks Farm over at Gleaners, where it's completely run
has a food kitchen now as well.
So, yeah. Yeah, so but still, it's run by volunteers. There's an option you have options there. So, but the other question is, like, I'm moving into an area called Roseville, right? It is not low income like certain areas in Detroit, but it is definitely more blue collar than say a Grosse Pointe, Michigan, right? First day I moved in, the neighbor to my right had a Confederate flag, and the other neighbor behind me said, "Hey, you're gonna smell a lot of weed coming from my house, just so you know." Like, all right, not exactly what I was used to growing up with.
I hate to nip this in the bud this early, but now I'm going to ruin it. I was wondering just a second ago how many consecutive weeks we can make it on this show with this undercurrent of let's crap on Roseville. I mean, this is two.
This is two. Well, hey, we haven't mentioned your favorite musical yet, so we've gotten. Nope. I've been good.
Absolutely not.
We did on the break.
We did, but. There are people who have gardens, right? My mother-in-law has a garden. You can buy seeds at any garden shop for a few bucks, and you can grow your own. Now it's a matter of time. It doesn't cost a lot to have your own little garden. And so my question about eating healthy, eating good, clean foods, we have the capability to do that for very cheaply, but people don't want to put the time in. And myself, I'm not going to build a garden in my backyard while I'm saying this.
I was going to say.
But there is the option there. We say, well, it's too expensive, as if it's too expensive all the time. It's just a matter of
time
is money. But yeah, do I want to spend the time doing it is a question. What do you prioritize? How are you prioritizing your time?
Well, if you're not taught to prioritize it, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
then
that's
I wouldn't.
Fair.
If you're not taught to, and then if you're like, you would have to somehow have like gotten enough energy and time to read up on it, figure out where to go, like want to do it, figure out like how to create the space and how to make everything like, and I don't even know the first thing about gardening. Like I wouldn't, that's like, I have to work 50 hours a week. You know what I mean? That's not something that I'm like, okay, how am I going to figure this out? But I do want to say, like, we're talking about America being obese. No, we're not accepting of fat people. That's absolutely not true. Right.
Okay.
But I want to say, how often do you look at someone who has an illness, right, who is unhealthy, that is not obesity, right, and tell them that they've got to do better? How often do you donate to cancer research? You know, how often do you read up on HIV and AIDS? How often do you read up on depression? How often do you read on addiction and trauma, right? Not often at all, right?
Right.
And so we sit here and we have these conversations about obesity, and it's really underlying in fat phobia because we don't care about overall health holistically. We don't care about that.
You're right. That's very
We're having this conversation because it's like, because we can blast, you know, music. We were just talking about music on the break. Like, we can blast music all day that promotes, like, having sex with multiple people and not being protected and having, like, whatever, like being a drug dealer and shooting people. We can listen to that all day and we won't comment on it. We won't make statuses on it. But we are somehow able to, like, articulate ourselves and have this, like, conversation about how we can eat healthier. And it's not actually because you care about our health. You actually care that we take up as little space as possible.
So let's talk about that for a second, because I brought it up in the break a little bit. Ellie, you had brought up that you had been in a couple relationships where the guys broke up with you because...
It wasn't the main cause. One of them tried to use it as an... Both of them tried to use my weight as an excuse to break up with me as one of several reasons. But one of them just said, well, there were some lifestyle choices that you had. And I was like, yeah, I don't really need to hear anything else, because I knew what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
I
knew that coded language.
That's coded language. And I knew what that meant. And this was not coming from a skinny person. You knew him. You met him.
Mm-hmm. I met him.
He was not a skinny person.
Nope.
Okay. So, like, for him to say that to me, it was deeply offensive that, like, he, of all people, would say that to me. One of the, and then the other one had, like, you know, he was, you know, used to going to the gym, and he used my weight as an excuse to break up with me. Even though there were a myriad of other reasons, including the woman that he ended up marrying a year later. I told him, it was like a week before he broke up with me, that he sat down and had this big conversation of, you know, my mom has all these health issues because of her diabetes, and your dad has diabetes and blah, blah, blah. And I just don't want to see you go down that path. And I don't know how much more I can do this. And I actually made a change, and I lost 35 pounds. And part of that was just to basically shove it in his face that, you know, I can do this.
And your revenge still, body?
Basically, that's what it was. And we were in a show together at the time, like, right for the 5 months after he broke up with me. And I was basically just like, hey, look, I can do this. I don't need you. And look how good I'm doing. And now I'm not really using... my, you know, if I really wanted to after my most recent breakup, then I could have gone and been like, yeah, I'm going to stay friends with him, quote unquote, so that I can, you know, show off how much weight I can lose without him. But I didn't feel like I needed to do that at the time. Mm-hmm. I'm at a place where I don't really feel like I need to prove to someone, oh, hey, look, I can do this without you. I want to do it because I want to do it.
Now, it's interesting. I mean, we talked a little bit about this off the, well, not everything I'm about to say, but my wife called me on some of this morning, and it's tough for me to have conversations with her because my wife is a fat woman, but she's beautiful. You know, fat but beautiful, fat and beautiful.
Don't say you, don't you do that.
But hear me out on this. I'm going to sound like an asshole because I am an asshole on some of this, and this is where my mind does two things at once. Where I was married, my ex-wife, I remember calling her a beached whale at one point. Yeah, she carries that with her to this day. And I would never.
Elena's left. She's out the door.
Right.
She's
now,
gone.
Now, bear in mind, I was 20 years old, and, you know, when you're 20, you say some dumb stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. And she carries that with her to this day.
Yeah.
Like, there are times, I mean, we don't like each other.
I remember in the fourth grade. Gregory Washington.
See?
He told me that he wouldn't be with me because I was fat, but everything else about me was great. So yeah, we do carry that.
I know. And I think when I said it, I was trying to be mean, but I didn't realize
how mean
that is, right? So there was that, right? But I loved her, right? She was fat, but I loved her. So there's this kind of bifurcation.
She's fat
of my mind.
And you loved her?
I'm saying but for a very specific reason here. Okay, so let me continue. Then there was a girl named Katie. We were together, and it's funny. She called me the other night. You know, I was telling my friends the other day. It's kind of strange that I'm still friends with my ex. And all I thought was, I never, ever got to the point where I admitted that you were my girlfriend. Loved her. Couldn't admit she was my girlfriend because she was fat. I was with another woman named Carol. Very wonderful woman. Never did anything wrong. Our relationship was great. She had some weight issues, and I couldn't accept it. I loved her, but I couldn't accept her weight. And now I'm married. I'm not going anywhere. I love my wife through and through. She is my boo. I love you, baby. But we had this conversation today, and we've had this conversation several times where her weight is an issue for me, and I don't know why, because she's the same. She's essentially the same weight. She's gained a little bit because her father died, and get a little depressed, but has not gained so much weight that she's this totally different person in my mind. Like, what the heck? I love this woman, but her weight is an issue for me, and in some ways, it's an issue on an attractional level. Attractional because of the violent beauty, or the beauty, beauty standards. This is what beauty is, and you're not meeting that criteria. Even though I saw past all this stuff over here that doesn't really matter when we were dating, now somehow it's an issue, and I'm not understanding why it's an issue, and it's led to conversations that are, I think, very hurtful for more so for her than for me. Because I'm the one asking her to change. I'm the one, but I'm also coming from this place where I'm like, I watched my mom struggle with her weight, have this gastric surgery. She lost a bunch of weight, got rid of her type 2 diabetes. My dad wants her to be around. I mean, I remember my mom got sick one time. My mom and dad are not super affectionate people, but I remember my dad like freaking out that he was going to lose his wife, right? Being at her bedside, it was so cute. And it's like, oh my God. In that moment, I was like, I really know my dad loves my wife. Or not my wife, my mom. And here I am with my wife, where right now her weight is not a health issue, but it will be a health issue for her down the road. And my only thought is, I never want to lose you. But mixed in there is this selfish, you're not the standard of beauty that I see in the culture as well. And it's tough when you're married and you still get attention because, again, I quote unquote look the way that I do. So I'll get women that catcall me. I'll get women that whistle at me. I will get women that will still hit me up on Facebook, even though I'm married, these kinds of things. And I'm like,
because society's telling you that based on your appearance, you, quote, deserve someone who looks a specific way, even though you love your wife very much and you deserve her and she deserves you. But there's this idea, like Elena was saying earlier, that you deserve more the smaller you are, and smaller people deserve small people, and you don't deserve as much if you're bigger and you take up more space. And I thought that was a great way to put it. But there's, I do believe honestly that you are sincerely concerned for health, but I also, you say you don't know why at a certain point you're struggling.
But I don't know that I am.
I don't know that I am.
I'm hearing what you're saying. I'm going, I'm feeling indicted here because I'm going, no, because I'm eating all the shit I can eat.
Yeah. Okay. No, this reminds me a lot of my last relationship where I don't think that he was unattracted to me and I don't think that he did not love me. But I do think, one, I want to second the fact that you are an asshole. That is a
thank
thing.
Thank you. Yes. Kent with the slow clap over there.
I can agree.
But I do want to say that I think that is a thing where we all search for validation. And so I can love you behind closed doors, but in public, I feel like I want something. I think men do this and masculine people do this, especially like I want other people to look at what I have as a prize. And I feel like not as many people are looking at this as like, I feel like I can't keep you as a trophy because you're too big. Right.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. See, and there's the other side of that for me as well, because I'm black. I'm married to a white woman. I'm married to a big white woman. Okay, so skinny black guy, big white woman. It's a stereotype as well. And because of who I am and my background, I fight so much against stereotypes. And then here I am essentially living one. When I was in college, I would go through the cafeteria and there'd be fried chicken. And I'd want to get fried chicken because I like fried chicken. And I think there's something wrong with you if you don't like fried chicken. But
correct.
I wouldn't get – my friend would be like, hey, Calvin, it's the chicken. And I would always get the pizza because I didn't want to be associated but then I would see, because I worked in the cafeteria, I had the key to the cafeteria. So at night, I would sneak back down to the cafeteria and get the leftover chicken, and I would eat it. In private. Yeah. Right? I can't chicken. I love you, but I can't be seen with you in public.
Your secret shame.
I'm very sensitive to stereotypes, but I'm willing to commit theft.
I'm sorry. Are you?
Well, my college paid. You know, yes. my I already paid for the food.
Right? Now I'm being a dick. Are you comparing your wife to fried chicken right now?
No, I'm comparing my wife, who I love, to something else that I loved, but I didn't want to be associated with the stereotype, so I avoided that kind of thing. So my wife is shorter than me, and I've got long legs, and so I tend to walk a few steps in front of her. And there will be times where I have to be conscious and go, am I walking ahead of her because I'm fast, or am I walking ahead of her because I don't want to be seen with her? And it's hard to be conscious of that because I love this woman. I am attracted to this woman. But at the same time, there is some shame narrative in my mind that I don't know where it comes from. Because the people that I've always been in love with are all the shape of my wife. Mm-hmm. All of them. But there is something that in the universe that's saying that's not okay for you. Or
that's like so interesting. That's so I am in a relationship with a transgender man right now. Mm-hmm. And I think we had a conversation where he said he has fought so hard to be considered normal, right? And now he is masculine presenting, and most people do not check him as someone who is trans. And he wants to be normal. And so sometimes I think when I come out, I'm Afrocentric. I have this huge Afro. I'm like wearing like whatever sunflower pants and a highlighter pink shirt. You know what I mean? Like, and I think that I don't ever think that he's unattracted to me, but I do think sometimes that is a thing for him. Like we are in public. I'm trying to be as normal as possible. I want to separate myself from the idea of whatever people think I am already, and you are like bringing attention to me. So now they're going to look at me and you, and now we look like this like circus couple, and like people are, and it really comes down to being weak-minded, to be honest. I think everyone wants to be validated, but I do think that at some point you have got to like grab a hold of your own mind. And every time you have those thoughts, and I think that's powerful, like every time you have those thoughts, really unpack it and say, this is not me. I'm not doing this for me. I love her. And I think you could be damaging her with these conversations, right? Because I feel like if you were my partner and I was listening to this right now, I would be crying.
Yeah. Just saying. I asked her not to listen. She's like, you know I'm going to. I'm like, shit. I don't know what to do there.
The open
and honest communication is an integral part of any relationship, I think. And we don't avoid this one just like we don't avoid any other ones. But yeah, it's a tough conversation, and I'm glad. And she's the only person of the women that I dated. She's the only one that I feel like I can have this conversation with. It's going to come off as a pat myself on the back moment because I lack the vocabulary to make it sound else. But I'm still an asshole here. I'm aware of this, and I don't know if that makes it better or worse.
Better.
I guess it depends on the day.
I think if you're not aware of it, it's like pulling teeth with someone to say, no, you're being fat phobic. And they're like, no, this is just my preference. If we've been force fed the image that smaller women are more beautiful and deserving of connection and love, like you said earlier. And so like, if you never have time, or the mental capacity to unpack that yourself, then like I think it's a lot better that you're able to do that.
Okay.
So, because I'm going to talk for a second because I've been silent for a while except for clapping. a big part of the fat acceptance movement seems to be the idea of health at every size, which according to my notes is all capitalized. So I guess that's a thing. And Health at Every Size advocates for a focus on healthy living and not on body image, which works in theory, but its application is okay. I'm going to shut Siri down. Okay. See, Siri hears me talking for some reason.
You said theory in Siri.
That's why. Okay. Okay. So I turned her off. The application is totally inconsistent. We acknowledge that somebody who is anorexic is clearly not healthy at their size and needs psychological and medical intervention. But we perpetuate the idea that a morbidly obese person could pursue an active lifestyle and remain at their size, and that saying otherwise would be shaming them. Is there a better approach?
Well, I know I've talked a lot, so I'm just going to be like 30 seconds. But I am a yoga practitioner, right? And I'm very active. I drink a gallon of water a day. No, I didn't today. I'm only halfway down. That's why. But, like, I'm very healthy. I'm 250 pounds. And I don't think – I think I've experienced the opposite of that in, like, anorexia. You're patted on the back. I went to high school with a girl who came back after summer vacation. She had some illness where she, like, lost a lot of weight because she was peeing out sugar. And they came back, and she came back, and everyone was like, you look so good, girl. And I remember thinking, I never said this out loud, this is problematic, but I remember thinking, why can't I get something like that? Oh, like, why can't this be me? And so I don't think that's the case. I think we are, like, really stuck on body image. And I think people see, like, one or two pictures of, like, fat people being like, hey, I love myself and I'm doing whatever. And then we're like, is this a thing? Like, everyone does this. We're just accepting fatness, and that's not what actually happens.
Okay. Dominic? Ellie?
Well, so I wanted to make a brief comment. I think you can be healthy at... Theoretically, like you said, you're 250 pounds and you're a healthy person. Like, you drink a gallon of water a day, you go to yoga. But I think part of the problem is in telling people that they can be healthy at every weight, I feel as if we ignore those cases in which obesity is extremely unhealthy for those people who are obese. And I get what, you know, the fat acceptance movement is all about, and I get what they're trying to accomplish, but I see no point in trying to, you know, sugarcoat what is actually a very serious public health problem. And I think we're at a serious disadvantage in America, especially because, you know, efforts like the fat tax and the soda ban in New York City, you know, the responses to those kinds of, you know, practical public policy issues to deal with this were, well, you know, we live in America. If you want to drink yourself into a high fructose, you know, syrup coma and die, you have the freedom to do that, which in theory is true. But I am worried that at what point, you know, at what point in our telling people that they can be healthy at every size, do we ignore what's actually, you know, I mean, many people describe it as an epidemic. So I think there needs to be kind of an element of realism in terms of, yes, you're healthy, but at the same time, we still have millions of people across the country who are suffering, who are obese and who have serious health problems and could very possibly die from these health problems.
Now, you said some of, part of this is diet as well. And we'll talk a little bit about your weight loss journey here in a minute, because you said you've lost 150 pounds over 4 years. That's me. That's my entire body weight. I'm gone now. But I did watch a documentary called Hungry for Change. I've watched a documentary called Food Incorporated. Food Incorporated sticks more in my mind than Hungry for Change. But one of the things that Food Incorporated talks about is essentially we're eating different configurations of corn. We're feeding our animals corn when they can't digest it, like we're giving cows corn when they should be eating grass, which is why we can sell grass-fed beef at a higher price. Like, they're supposed to eat grass. Like, why are you feeding them all this corn? But we're eating different configurations of corn in one way or another, whether it is, like you said, you can drink yourself into a high fructose corn syrup coma. So all of our soda is made with corn syrup. Our chips, obviously made of, you know, corn. And you've got, again, I don't know all the different types of foods, but if you watch the documentary, you'll see this. And so I do wonder if it being about changing people's diets to make them more healthy, adding in exercise to make them more healthy, I do wonder if with our food industry the way that it is, if it is possible, even if you are paying higher amounts of money to eat more healthy. I do know that I posted a meme the other day, if you mix coconut oil into your kale, it makes it easier to scrape the kale into the garbage can. Which I find hilarious. But I shared
that with three family members. It's very funny.
But I do wonder if the way the food is processed and made, even if people decide, you know what, today is the last day I'm going to be unhealthy, I'm going to eat proper foods, if that's really going to change anything, because the food itself is poison.
Yes. And also, to go back to the idea of health, there are millions. I cannot turn on the television without seeing a commercial about helping people get smaller. So when I come on things like this and I hear people say, like, are we just normalizing it? Are we just accepting fat bodies? I don't know where you guys live, but I can go online in the groups that I'm a part of and I'm accepted, right? But everyday life, that's not a thing for me. So I turn, there's a Nutrisystem, there's a waist trainer, there's a wrap, there's, you wrap yourself in bologna and get smaller. There's something new to tell you, teach you how to be smaller. So the idea that we are just accepting it and it's becoming an epidemic, I think is like completely false. And accepting your body should not at all. If you have an issue with like wanting to be healthy and wanting to like help people be healthy, there are so many professions you can go into. There are so many like weight loss programs that you can go into to help people, right? And so just going to bash people, that's where it turns into fat shaming.
Exactly.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, exactly. That's fair. All right.
Because
are you saying though that obesity isn't an epidemic?
I'm saying that you saying that accepting fat bodies is now becoming like an epidemic. I don't think that's a thing.
No, I'm saying that in our pursuit to make people comfortable with themselves, which there's nothing wrong with that, I think we are running the risk of ignoring the public health crisis that is obesity. There's nothing wrong with making people feel comfortable in their own body, but at what point does that attempt to make people feel comfortable and confident in their own body turn into maybe not a deliberate, but definitely ignoring what is actually a serious public health crisis?
There's no way a
that's
fat
what
person,
I'm saying.
I don't think there's any way a fat person can ignore the fact that they're fat and they're unhealthy. They're bombarded with like people telling them this every single day. But also, I forgot what my second
a public was. Health. I mean, I have a very hard time thinking. I know that obesity is a problem. I have a very hard time taking seriously the word epidemic when it comes to obesity, because it's not something that can be spread. It is not something that I can give to you. And that and I know that that's not what you're saying. But that's kind of, it's almost what people think sometimes when they, if someone is afraid to like be seen in public with me or touch me or something, like, I don't know, like, you're not going to catch my fat. Like, trust me, if I could get rid of some of this by giving it to you, I probably would. but I really dislike the term epidemic. And I know that's really the only thing that's, you can really call it right now, like mass spread of unhealthy, you know, eating habits and whatnot. And I don't think that telling people to exercise so that they can be healthier is going to stop the addiction that comes from eating certain kinds of foods, addictions to kinds to behavior or learned behavior that has been taught in the home. It takes a lot more work than just making someone feel comfortable, because hating yourself really, for me, hating myself has only led to unhealthy ways of trying to get rid of weight. And I know that's the case with a lot of people. So making myself feel accepted and comfortable in my weight does not make me think that I don't have a problem or that my weight
exactly.
could not be an issue later. So I understand what you're saying as far as like, no, we don't want it to get to the point where we're saying, oh, you do you because it doesn't affect me. I understand it doesn't affect me. If you're 600 pounds, that's not going to affect me as a person. But unless my advice is solicited, I don't need to tell the 600-pound person that they need to lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
I get what you're saying, and I use the term epidemic because I think that is the only word that can match
right.
the scale of the problem. Not in terms of being able to spread it, but I mean the scale of how many people there are in America who are obese or morbidly obese, how many people are suffering from health problems related to obesity in terms of heart problems or breathing problems or joint problems or whatever. And so I think epidemic is the only, and I'm not the only one who uses that. I mean,
right,
there are nonprofit organizations that use that, but I mean it in terms of simply the size of the problem.
Right.
That's what I meant by using epidemic.
And I was just giving you also the example of, I mean, so there are people who are literally afraid with the fat phobic business. There are people who are afraid that somehow if they get to, if they're too nice to a fat person or if they're in too close contact with a fat person that, oh, well, something bad is going to happen or something.
What?
So
I just want to, like, really quickly, I just finished reading a book called Addiction and Trauma, written by, I just looked it up, Dr. Tyen Dayton, and I think anybody should check it out. But scientifically, that is not how you get someone out of an addiction. Okay. So the idea that how far can we take this? I am more likely to, how do you expect me to love my body? You don't want me to love my body, right? Because you shame me about it and you think I shouldn't and it's a shame, right? But you want me to love it enough to care about what I put into it. And so I think it's kind of contradicting the point that people make when it's like, when I love myself and when I focus on, like, feeling good and I'm like, hey, I'm a dope person, I'm like this, I'm whatever, now I care about how I feel, as opposed to you beating me down all the time. That's like, that doesn't work, and that's like a scientific thing. I think you should read the book.
I don't think anyone who's serious, and I'm certainly not advocating that we beat people down. And I mean, I am still an overweight person, so I'm speaking from experience, but I would not argue that we have to beat people down or we have to, you know, hate themselves. But I think there needs to be a real conversation, though, about the health problems that come along with being morbidly obese and obese, especially collectively as a society. I mean, just in terms of the number of people that die every year from obesity and obesity-related illnesses, and the number of people that are, you know, that are projected to, the number of fatalities that are projected to occur in the future from these problems. I think that's the kind of conversation we have to have. I don't think anyone's advocating for making people hate themselves, but I mean, people need to be made aware that there are health risks associated with being overweight.
Do you, like, I just have a hard time understanding how anyone can think that, like, you wouldn't know. Like, I don't, like, I was aware at, like, 7. Like, you're constantly told that. There are conversations everywhere.
I think certain things can get mixed, too, because, I mean, there's a – I can't remember what her name is, but the F Your Beauty Standards lady. She's a first person to get a modeling contract. She's quantifiably huge. She's a big woman. Absolutely gorgeous woman.
Oh, I know. I used to follow her on Instagram.
And can't remember her name right now, but beautiful, big, considered a supermodel, plus size model. And I think what
Tess Holliday.
Okay, so with Tess Holliday, I think what happens is there is a mixture of that violence from the beauty industry of this is what is beautiful. Because a lot of women, you know, how do you, the joke earlier, how do you get a bikini body? You put yourself in a bikini. That's how it happens, right? But there is the fact is like, hey, by summer I want to have a bikini body, so I'm going to work out, I'm getting healthier, I'm eating better, I'm exercising, all these different things. And those are good things that you're doing. Your reasoning might not be right, but at least it's good that you're trying to get on the right track to health. And so part of that, the impetus has been because what I am now is not conceived of as beautiful. So then when you have a Tess Holliday come along, it's like, F your fucking beauty standards. You know, this is beautiful. Well, then you now have people who are very, you know, very realistically in a unhealthy situation where they're like, hey, I am beautiful. I'm good. And so I don't have to change anything. And that's where I think you're getting these. That's where I think these two things mix, where Dominic is saying this is where I think it could be a problem. Yeah, you know that you're You said, I don't think there's a fat person who doesn't know that they're unhealthy. But then when someone comes along and says,
I don't think there's one fat person, because fat is a type of oppression. I mean, like,
it's a type of what?
We deal with a type of oppression as a fat person, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think there's one fat person. You can, you know, think you're beautiful. I don't think there's one fat person on the planet. I can't speak for everyone who has not at some point, and even like to this day still, like, looks at themselves and wishes that they were smaller, because there is a privilege that comes with being smaller. Not because, right, not all the time.
So even Tess Holliday probably wishes she were smaller.
And so that's what she promotes, you know, because that's important and that's what I promote. But there are times, like I said, I'm going through the process of figuring out is the gastric sleeve right for me. And it's like, I recognize that getting a job is going to be easier. Finding love is going to be easier. This, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, I may love myself, but I don't think that there's, like, I think that that is, like, I don't know. I just kind of think that's kind of ridiculous.
And I think, where the, again, where, like what I was saying before about you know, having the, like, getting the revenge body. Thank you. Getting the revenge body, like, so, like, losing the weight without my ex, but letting him see that I could lose the weight without him. And now, like, going through and trying to figure out, okay, what is, why do I really want to lose this? And what is, you know, what is my reasoning behind this? Like, figuring out not just, it's accepting myself as beautiful and realizing that is different than being at my highest health standard. And figuring out, okay, now what do I do to, I hope I'm making sense.
No,
what do I, how am I going to do this so that I am not, you know, so I'm doing this for the right reasons, to make sure. And there's the line is, am I doing this because I don't think I'm pretty enough? Am I doing this because I want to be healthier? And if you're doing it because you don't think you're pretty enough, then you're either going to do it unhealthily or it's not going to last at some point.
Right. There's the old saying, the right thing for the wrong reasons is the wrong thing. Right?
Yeah, so. But like that also like makes me think about you saying that at least you're doing it makes me think if you...
It's kind of like at least you're here. At least you're not dead.
Yeah, but like that also that goes back to me saying beauty culture is violent, right? And so the idea that being beautiful... makes you more deserving of like love, and that's why people want to do it. That shouldn't be a thing either. But now we should attack the root of the issue, right? And so if you are having an issue with like people losing weight because they want to be beautiful or like they want to fit in a bikini, then like and they're not doing it the right way, there are so many ways to go about that where you could help the cause without like doing it the way most people go about it, which is fat shaming.
Okay. And I'll tell you, I hate to be super consistent, but it's kind of my thing, consistency. If given a choice between somebody doing the right thing for the wrong reason and somebody doing the wrong thing, I'll take the right thing for the wrong reason.
I think that's arrogant.
You're very he's very pragmatic. He always has been. You'll find us on a number of issues.
I would rather the right thing got done. Than
I think that anyone determining what the right thing is and forcing it on someone else is problematic and arrogant.
Oh, sure. I just thought we were talking about like objective things. Like if there's a good choice that is done for the wrong reason, like for selfish motives, or a objectively bad thing, I'll take the good thing being done.
But then that goes into like what I'm saying. You don't get to choose what's good for me.
Right, and it's just a difference of opinion. Again, just because we're the host doesn't mean you have to agree with what we're saying by any means.
But no, no one's saying that something isn't. No one's saying that trying to. I mean, you can. People are free to do whatever they want, and they can be obese if they so choose. What we're saying is that there needs to be a discussion about the health risks associated with that. And I understand the conversation about, you know, the emotional, the mental, that side of it. But I mean, in terms of, I mean, simply health and public policy as related to health. I mean, it is undeniable that there is a problem, a collective societal problem in terms of people who are obese and people suffering from illnesses from obesity. That can't be denied. And I think the question from then is, well, how do we deal with that in a way that is not fat shaming and that is productive and meaningful, that simply isn't saying, oh, you're fat, you need to change.
And just to quickly defend my honor for a second, I was not talking about when I said that. I'm talking about outside of the subject that we're talking about.
Thank you.
Like let me give an analogy. If James Earl Jones donates $1 million to an orphanage because he's awesome, and Donald Trump donates $1 million to an orphanage because he wants the press and wants the ego gratification, I am grateful in both cases that the orphanage got the money.
Got it.
Okay. I like that your opposite of Donald Trump is James Earl Jones.
I tried to think of who's
Mufasa.
Who's a moral titan?
And there's Darth Vader. Yeah. Yeah.
But
Mufasa, because we got the Disney thing going on, right?
Yeah.
So unfortunately, we're out of time, and I think that all three of you have raised some really good questions, which lets me know that we're going to have this conversation again. I think it was a good flyover. There are issues, Elena, that you brought up that I'm going to be thinking about and trying to find some books to read on. to craft better questions for the next time we hit this. Dominic, things that you were saying about, you know, the epidemic health issue, you know, how do we talk about that without fat shaming people? I think that would be a great conversation. Kirsten, just in terms of, you know, dating, how do we talk about some of these issues in and around dating? I think that those are all fantastic questions that we can get tons and tons of mileage out of. Unfortunately, we only had 2 hours and we're out of time. So we're going to close this down. But thank you to our panelists for being here. And thanks so much for listening to Leading Questions with Calvin Moore. Make sure you check out our website, leadingquestionsnow.com, where you can find all of our episodes from this season and last season, bios, a calendar of upcoming topics, and even suggest topics for us to talk about. If you're interested in bringing our program out to your college, university, or organization, email us at hello@leadingquestionsnow.com, and we'll get back to you. To our live listeners, hi, honey. Thanks for tuning in. To those of you listening on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or SoundCloud, thanks so much for subscribing. Please leave us a rating. And tune in next week, where Kent and I have invited a group of observant Muslims for our Muslim in America Part 2, Islam and Politics panel. Given the recent bombing in Kabul, as well as the fact that it is Ramadan now, the holiest month in the Islamic calendar, we're hoping for a fruitful and informed conversation. We will see you next week. It's more than this music and money and women.